Welcome to a Veterans Podcast, powered by Wisconsin Veterans Network, the show where we hear unique, inspiring stories from veterans all over. Veterans who've transitioned, who've overcome obstacles, and even those still struggling. We will learn all veterans have a unique story, ones filled with pain and triumphs, and we will learn no veteran is alone, no matter the path they took. We share their stories to help motivate and inspire the world, to help understand what it means to be a veteran, and most of all, we share to give them a voice amongst the noise. You can find us at aveteranspodcast.com to learn more and how you can be a part of the show. Welcome back, everybody, to A Veterans Podcast. My name is Kelsey, and I am your host. It's good to be back. I think it's been a couple weeks. We've been off just trying to get our new schedule into play. We're going to start releasing episodes every 2 weeks just to give us some time to edit. Things have been busy at Wisconsin Veterans Network, where we're helping veterans kind of just get through this crazy time of life that we're in right now and make sure that they're set up for success. So you may see a little bit of a lag in the episodes posting, but we're still here and we still want to tell your story. So I would love for you to contact us so that we can get you on the show and you can share your story with other veterans. On today's podcast, we have a special guest, Gunner's Mate Chief Petty Officer Jeanette Tarquino. So I actually served with her on my first ship, the USS Cowpens, and I remember her being in the berthing when I like walked in and was so scared to be on a ship, and she was so kind, and she's really a great person. She has a really great story. She served for 15 years, and so she's got a lot of wisdom in what she shares, and her story is unique just like everybody else's, so I'm really excited to have her on the show. Before we get started, I just want to share that today's show is sponsored by Wisconsin Veterans Network, an established Wisconsin nonprofit ran by veterans for veterans. Their mission is to provide guidance and support for all veterans, whether Guard, Reserve, active, or even a bad discharge, looking for any kind of assistance in the state of Wisconsin. If you're a Wisconsin veteran looking for an answer, whether a simple question about benefits or are currently homeless, give them a call today. You can find out more information on wisvetsnet.org or at aveteranspodcast.com. All right, let's get this party started.
Hello.
Hello, is this Jeanette?
This is.
Hi, it's so nice to hear your voice. I feel like it's been forever since I've talked to you.
It has.
And like so much life has happened. I vicariously follow you and your sweet service dog on Facebook, but
hello.
I haven't talked to you, so I'm excited we get to kind of catch up through this podcast.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been so long.
I know. I was just doing the math and I was like, so I met you in 2005 and then I can't remember when you left the ship. When did you
leave? I left in 2006.
You left in 2006. So it's been 14 years.
I know. And both of us have been through some crazy shit.
Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure. So we're just going to jump right in and kind of go with it. And then I already told everybody prior to getting you on the call that you were in the Navy and you served 15 years. Why did you join the military?
Oh, man. So I initially joined the military. Well, first of all, I have a brother who is 5 years older than me. And growing up, everything he did or was interested in was what I did or was interested in. So he was kind of like my hero growing up. And one day he had a Air Force recruiter come to the house and talk to the family. And he was thinking about possibly joining the military. And so I became interested and just paid attention to what the recruiter was saying and asked my own questions. And at the time I was probably in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at that time it wasn't even something I was really interested in. I was more interested in it just because he was.
Yeah.
And so that kind of stuck with me a little bit. And then I just randomly talked to a Navy recruiter at school one day because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I was a junior at the time, and I just randomly talked to a Navy recruiter. They happened to be at the school, and I just kind of got hooked. I ended up enlisting the summer before my senior year in high school. So I went into my senior year already enlisted, ready to go. Didn't have to worry about college applications.
Wasn't that awesome? I did the same thing. So it was like, oh, everybody.
It was so chill.
Yeah.
I felt the stresses of everybody else senior year. And I was sitting back going, look, I know what I'm doing. I don't have to worry about it. But it was crazy. I was just sold. I am one of those type of people though, like, I make a decision pretty quickly and I just kind of stick to it and that's it. And I'm kind of impulsive like that. So yeah. It just kind of worked. And at the time it was before September 11th. So at the time we weren't at war. My family was freaking out because we weren't a military family. Mm-hmm. And, there were, I guess, you know, my grandfather had suffered in the Navy and I didn't know these things. These were things that were hidden from me and my family, and the military was never something that was spoke about in my family. So it was one of those things that kind of was a shock and awe to everybody. And again, I walked to my dad and I was like, oh, it's not a big deal. We're not at war. Like, it's fine. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, 6 months later, 9/11 happens and my family freaks out and all of that. But I just was like, I'm in it. Like, by that time they had already accepted it. So,
and was your
kind of headstrong too. So they knew they weren't going to change my mind.
Was your brother in already then, or?
My brother never went.
Oh, so he never joined. So you kind of created the path for it.
Yeah. He never joined. He wanted to, but he was, engaged and he was young and, you know, so he decided to, not go.
Oh.
And I went instead.
Well, look at you.
It was the time we split paths. That was the moment our paths kind of split.
Nice. So you had mentioned September 11th and how you had joined before them, but where were you on September 11th and how do you think that kind of impacted your career?
So I was in school. I was senior in high school. I remember sitting in calculus class, I believe, when I heard it come over the intercom.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't educated. I had no idea what the Twin Towers were. I didn't understand what was really going on until they put us in a class and turned on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where it kind of hit me a little bit of, oh shit.
Yeah. This is for real.
Yeah. But at the same time, I was still young enough to not really understand the consequences.
Yeah.
I didn't understand really what the Twin Towers were, what they meant. Like, I just knew that somebody had crashed a plane into buildings.
Yeah.
And it was a terrorist attack. And so it really did take some time and explanations to really understand what was really going on. So it wasn't an immediate kind of response for me. And I think that when you're young and you're in school, there's a lot of things outside in the world that you really you don't understand and you don't know.
Yeah.
So it made sense for me to not know, but at the same time, I was a little embarrassed. I was like, how do I not know what this means? Like, how do I not understand what the Twin Towers are. And it took me aback a little bit. But at the same time, I was like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Like, let's do this.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so by the time I left, I was ready and, you know, and willing to go. It was interesting. I guess going into the military after September 11th, obviously there was that big push. There was that big recruiting going on. So there was a lot of people coming in at the time. So it was almost a sense of like empowerment because people were joining for the right reasons.
Yeah.
It seemed like I had some older people in like my boot camp. And it was just one of those things where people were going in for the right reasons. They were going in because they loved their country. They were going in because there was a war, because they wanted to do something, because they had a sense of just duty or whatever. And I noticed that changed a lot as my time went on in the military. That wasn't so much the case anymore.
Yeah.
People weren't respectful anymore. People weren't joining for the right reasons, and or they had a sense of entitlement when they were coming in. So it really did change the dynamic as my years went on.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I remember when I was instructing at Great Lakes right before I got out, and I remember asking, like, how many of you really remember September 11th? And I think like two people raised their hand, and some of them were like, I wasn't even born yet, petty officer. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. It was like, oh man.
Wait, how did that happen?
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Like
when I joined, you know, there was a sense of respect. And by the time I left, and not even by the time I left, probably within 5 years of me being in, that sense of respect from the new kids coming in and from the boots, if you want to call them, was gone.
Yeah.
There was no sense of respect. There was no sense. It was just a, you can't talk to me that way. You can't treat me that way. Or I don't need to work. Like, yes. I don't need to. And just the morality of it was just so crazy to me. Like, I couldn't comprehend how you could come into the military with the thought process that you don't respect rank, you don't respect your job or whatever. And that was difficult. It was a very difficult transition for me.
So that kind of leads us into our next question then, because it is a very different Navy now than it was in the early 2000s, even when like I joined a few years after you, but it's definitely much different now. So why did you get out of the Navy, and was it your choice?
Sure. Yes and no. So I medically retired in August of 2017 due to a traumatic brain injury that I sustained while I was deployed.
Okay.
Was it my choice to get out? Yes and no. I was determined to do my 20 years. I was going to retire. I always was that person. Mm-hmm. However, I got injured in 2011.
Oh, wow.
So I was at my 10-year mark when I got hurt. So I spent the additional 5 years really pushing through, trying to recover, trying to work again, in and out of limited duty. And it really put a strain on myself and my mental health. And I wasn't able to do my job anymore, which was very depressing to me because I loved my job.
Yeah, you had a lot of pride in that. Gunner's
I
mate
did.
Stuff.
I had a lot of pride. Ooh, girl. I worked for it. I felt like I earned that pride. And so I was very proud of it. And I had just made chief or E7 for those who don't know what a chief is, but I had just made E7 right after my accident. And that was like the goal that most sailors, mm-hmm. you know, that's their goal, to make chief. Like, it's like your world kind of, everything opens up when you make chief, like everything yeah. just kind of falls into place. And I had just made chief, and I was, you know, so I was like, I'm going to push through this. I'm going to try. But I just wasn't able to lead my sailors the way I needed to. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't able to give the time and energy that I needed to be successful. Mm-hmm. And it was killing me mentally, and just the struggles. And, cause I do have some cognitive problems. I have PTSD. I have, you know, some issues, mm-hmm. and I was struggling on a daily basis to get through the day and be there for my sailors. Mm-hmm. And when it wasn't working anymore, it was one of those things where it was like, it's not worth me fighting to push through this anymore. If it's not good for me and it's not good for my sailors. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of have a coming to heart moment with myself and be like, this is no longer good for you.
Yeah.
So I had to make the decision to fight to be medically retired.
Mm-hmm. And how long did that take you?
So,
like from the actual start of it, like I know you had gone through like recovery and all those things yeah. over that 6 years, but like from the actual, when you were like, I'm going to get medically retired, let's start yeah. this process.
It took a little over a year, maybe a year and a half.
Okay.
I had to go back through limited duty again. And then I had to, once I went, you have to be on limited duty. I was actually on my third set of limited duty, which you have to be approved. You usually only get two. Mm-hmm. I was on my third, which had to be approved. And so I had to do that time and then go through a med board. And then I had to go through a formal hearing. So it was at least about a year and a half process.
Wow.
And it was a rough process. It wasn't easy by any means. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was just because of my medical situation. A lot of that was because I had to do a lot of fighting for myself, mm-hmm. Which is hard when you're fighting the military. Yeah. But it was what I knew I had to do. I knew I had to get what I deserved. I knew I had to get the medical care I needed. I knew that I had to do what was right for myself. And still be there for my sailors when I could. And I did. I worked at the time when I was waiting to get out, I was working with the limited duty sailors.
Okay.
So I was able to kind of help them get in touch, those that qualified, get in touch with Navy Safe Harbor, which is the program for ill and injured service members in the Navy.
Yeah, you introduced me to them.
Yeah, yeah. They I was a big advocate for them because they really did help me through my medical situations, mm-hmm. and they were able to get me in contact with people when I needed it. And then also, most people didn't know about them. So I was able to really kind of provide a, kind of a stepping point between injured sailors and that program who weren't aware of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Which gave me a sense of purpose, which was really what I needed at that time. So it was really helpful.
That's awesome. So in that time that you were working on your medical retirement, were you able to prepare at all to get out of the Navy, or were you so focused on like that process that you weren't able to prepare for your transition, or how did that work?
It was kind of, I had the time I needed. But obviously the medical board and all of that really did take precedence for me, mm-hmm. but I did go through the normal transition that everybody is supposed to go through. I went through the TAPS class. But I also had planned, like I knew I was going to go back to school. Mm-hmm. Like that was my plan. I knew I was going to go back to school. So I was able to apply for college. I was able to be accepted. My last day of active duty, which was during my terminal leave. Mm-hmm. So my last day of active duty was my first day of college. Like
oh,
I had no break time. Yeah. It was, and which was good for me because I don't do well with downtime. Mm-hmm. So it was good. It was stressful, but it was good at the same time. I don't recommend you doing that.
What did you end up going to school for?
I went to school for kinesiology. I actually am finishing up right now, so I'll be graduating this December.
Yay!
Yeah, so I thought, you know what, this injury, it's been a disaster for my life, but it's also been a blessing in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I've had opportunities to meet amazing people. I've had opportunities to participate in adaptive sports and learn a lot about that. And that kind of became a passion for me. And I really enjoy being around people with disabilities because their mindsets are so different. Mm-hmm. And they have much more positive outlooks and things like that. So I decided, well, I want to go to school for working with people with disabilities or working in adaptive sports or something like that. So that's why I chose to go to school for kinesiology.
That's awesome.
Whether or not that is what happens, especially with everything going on in this world right now.
Yeah.
That may not be the case.
But at least you tried, right? You gave it the old college try.
That's right. I got it. I'm going to have a degree. That's it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm kind of at with that.
That's awesome. So what were some of the biggest mistakes, if any, that you made during your transition or like right after your transition?
Sure. So first of all, don't start school within like the day you get out. Let's say that's probably mistake number one. Give yourself some transition time.
Yeah.
But I would say not planning or thinking about the long term. I only thought, what am I doing immediately after I get out? Where am I going to live? What am I going to do? Like, I made immediate decisions and I never planned or thought about the long term. And I think that was one of my biggest mistakes, because here I am now, you know, 3 years later, 3.5 years later, and I have no idea what I want to do when I grow up. I have no idea where I want to live, what state I want to be. Like, I have no, I'm in the exact same place I was 3 years ago before I got out.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, you're not alone. most people that we've talked to on the podcast have all said the same thing, with the exception of maybe two or three. Everybody else was like, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. So you're not alone. I just want to let you know that.
Well, thanks. That makes me feel so much better. But it's one of those things where you dedicate your life, especially somebody like me who's put in 15 years. I feel like it's a different mindset when you've only done your 4 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. Just because you're still kind of young, I feel like you just have a little bit more options. Mm-hmm. But like 15, I mean, don't get me wrong, 4 or 6 years, you know, is still very much the same concept of having to think and having to change your mindset and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But my plan was to retire. Like, I had a whole plan. Of course, I didn't have a plan after that, but I had a plan to do that. Mm-hmm. And my whole world got turned upside down.
Yeah.
And everything was taken away from me. It was like all of my goals and plans were just thrown out the window. And I didn't have a choice in that. Like, that wasn't my choice.
Yeah. And I think people, because I experienced the same thing you did.
Yeah.
As far as that thought process. And I think what kind of sucks for people getting out in a situation where it's medical retirement or a med board or things like that is you don't even have time to wrap your head around the fact that you're getting out. All you can think about is your injury or your illness or how that's going to change your life. And by the time you really accept that part of it, then you're like, but wait, now what do I do? Like, I have this career that I've had for 10, 15 years, and now I have to like completely start over. Like, how do you do that? And
exactly.
So I think I think that's huge in the world of trying to transition out of a lifestyle, because I don't think it's just a job. It's a lifestyle. Right. Like, how do you transition out of this lifestyle into a new lifestyle? And by the way, have an injury or an illness or something else that's going to affect you the rest of your life.
And that's kind of the biggest problem is that I was lucky enough that I was still in 5 years after my accident, because it took me three years before I actually had like a
epiphany.
Thank you. Epiphany that this was my life and that I was finally starting to accept the new me, the changes and the needs that I had. And, you know, it was one of those, it took me 3 years before that happened. And luckily I was still in at the time. So the transition wasn't as difficult for me because I was already transitioning into that mindset of my new life. Yeah. But for somebody that doesn't have that transition time frame, like it's devastating.
Yeah.
Because not only is your life changing, but now everything that you live for, your job, your lifestyle, you know, it when you join the military, it's not just a job, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure.
And it takes years of adjustment to get to that lifestyle. And when that's ripped away from you, you no longer necessarily know how to deal daily. I can tell you, I'm going to tell you a quick story.
That's fine.
I remember walking on campus one day and I put my hands in my pocket and I almost came to tears at the laughing at the idea that I was so happy and excited that I could walk around with my hands in my pocket. It was so like it was empowering. I was like, Oh my God, I can walk around with my hands in my pockets. I can drink and walk at the same time.
That's funny.
What? You know, and it's like that just the simple things like that, that you don't think about how your lifestyle changes.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're just like, what is going on? I don't have to like be in bed by 10 o'clock. Wait a minute. I don't have to, like, I can now make my own decisions.
Yeah. Hold that's on. Crazy. Right.
You know, like the thought, I had all those kinds of little epiphany kind of things happening for the first year of getting out, where I was just like, wait a minute. Like, I'm not breaking the law. If I get my nails done, if I get my hair done, like, the day I got medically retired, I dyed my hair multiple colors.
That's awesome. Just
because I was like, yes.
You can do it now.
I can do this now. But that, again, goes back to that. I had 5 years to prep for that. Because I knew it was coming. I just didn't want to accept it. But, like, I had that five-year time to kind of prep for that. So I feel like the transition was a little bit easier because that was already in the back of my mind.
So
versus somebody who doesn't.
So what do you think are some of the positives you made then, knowing you had that time and stuff? Is there anything that stuck out, like either before your transition or after or during or anything like that?
I could say the biggest positive thing for my transition was being in a place that had a support system. So I have a family support system, which is very helpful. But my college has this, it's this unique program where like the only school in the country that has it. And it's a veterans center on campus and they help connect you with pretty much everything you need. So, excuse me. They have VA there. They have their own people to help you get accommodations for your medical needs, for school. I can go because of my PTSD, I still do regular therapy sessions and all that kind of stuff. So there, a therapist was there twice a week. So I didn't have to leave campus to go to this appointment. Like, it was on campus.
Oh, wow. And that's phenomenal.
Yeah. So the program that they have there was so helpful in the transition, and they have a living center there. So if you can't get housing or whatever, you can live at the center. And that also means that there are veterans there living at the center.
Oh, wow.
And granted, some of those veterans are young kids who just did their, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, or they're reservists, mm-hmm. or whatever. So they don't have all the same experiences, mm-hmm. but they still know the lifestyle a little bit, you know, so you still feel like you're connected to the community in that way. And I feel like that was probably the biggest positive, mm-hmm. is that there was still that connection. So it wasn't like a complete break off, and being completely isolated. There was people that I could go to that knew my situation, that understood what I was going through. There's a guy that works there who's a combat veteran. He is an amputee, arm amputee. You know, he has a brain injury. Mm-hmm. So when I go in and I'm frustrated and I'm upset because I can't process something and my cognitive function is just complete shut down, he can talk me through it because he knows, he understands.
That's so
cool.
Like,
he gets it. So that was probably the best blessing, mm-hmm. that came with the transition. And I mean, I know that this is going to lead into your next question, but that is my biggest advice to anybody, is when you do get out, if you are transitioning, to find people.
Yeah.
To find a group, to find something where you can find or be around people that know what you're going through, that experiences, because we all have some kind of experience, positive or negative. We all have some kind of experience that affects us in some way, shape, or form, in the military, in our life, whatever. And to be around people that can somewhat understand, or at least have been there, can help you with that transition, can help you in whatever you need. I feel like that was probably the biggest thing I could ever say, is just find people. Don't isolate yourself. I have met students at school that are like, well, I'm out of the military. I don't want anything to do with it anymore. So they won't go to the center. They won't use the resources. But once they actually finally do, mm-hmm. they're constantly using them because it's helpful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. So before I ask my next question, because you kind of did answer it a little bit, but
yeah.
I have another question and I didn't put it on the paper, so I apologize.
Sure. No, you're fine.
But I had mentioned earlier that you do have a service dog.
I do.
And if you wanted to just for a minute share who you worked with to get that service dog.
Yeah,
and like
absolutely.
Kind of put that information out. Cause we do get that question a lot at Wisconsin Veterans Network, where I work, is they ask, you know, I'm looking for a service dog, or I'm in need of a service dog. Where can I go? Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to give a little quick commercial.
Absolutely. Yes. My service dog. Okay. So I love her so much. She has been, I'll give you a little bit of background. Her name is Gaza. And she is a rescue. She is a lab and golden mix. So like the best of two amazing breeds. Mm-hmm. The organization I worked through initially was called Canines for Veterans, which was a subgroup of Canines for Service.
Okay.
The people that owned that have since broken off into their own business. They created another company, and I have followed with them because they were amazing. So the new organization is called, now Canines for Veterans still exists, mm-hmm. But the new organization is called Four Paws and a Wake Up.
Oh, nice.
And it's cute, right?
Yeah.
And so what they do is they take rescue dogs, they go and rescue them, and then they train them. And they test them and they have them medically cleared and all of this stuff to make sure that you have an animal that is A, going to last, B, is already trained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they also ensure that you have a stable connection. And so the way that they work is, and you can go to their website, Four Paws and a Wake Up. The way that they work is that you put an application in. So I had to go through a whole application process. Then if and when I was selected, I had to have, I had to have references, and they would contact, you know, they contacted my references, they contacted my doctors and everything to make sure this was something that I needed, something mm-hmm. that would work for me and be beneficial to both myself and the animal. So it is a little bit of a process. Mm-hmm. I had a little interview, and then when I was selected, they chose the dog for me. And that was based off of my needs. That was based off of what the dog does well, because they train their dogs with over 90 different commands. And then they specialize train to the person after that.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So, and I have had amazing compliments from people about her being one of the best trained dogs that they've seen. And they really do an amazing job at training their dogs, and they explain to you how to train. They explain to you how it works and all of this so that you're educated so that you can also continue the training afterwards. Mm-hmm. So once they chose me and the dog was ready, they flew me down to North Carolina, because that's where they were at the time. They flew me down to North Carolina. And I spent a week with them, and it was a one-on-one training, which is different from some organizations. Some organizations do like bulk training where they have multiple people and multiple dogs all in one setting. Mm-hmm. So every organization is different. That is the only thing I can say, is I can only speak to like my organization.
Yeah.
But people who are looking for service dogs, my biggest recommendation is to do your research. Mm-hmm. Veterans, absolutely reach out to Four Paws and a Wake Up. Tell them Gaza sent you. They will love it. They do keep custody of their dogs for 5 years, because your dog's value, a service dog is valued over $50,000.
Oh, yeah.
With the time and effort that goes into training and all that kind of stuff. I did not pay a dime. They paid for everything. They paid for my trip down there. They gave me supplies. Like, they are truly amazing. They're a nonprofit organization. I love them dearly. They really, and they check up on her. They ask for her constantly. You know, they keep up with her vet medical records. If there was ever a problem, they would do everything they can to help me. That's when awesome. She comes to retirement, they'll put me back at the top of the list to get another dog. Like, they're super amazing. They're just amazing.
That's so cool.
And yeah. So I always say, like, do your research, because there are tons of thousands of organizations out there. Mm-hmm. However, this is like my big, like, yeah. There are a lot of fake organizations out there too.
Yeah.
And because there is no national registry, there is no like national official way to go about a lot of this. There are laws and there are regulations, and a lot of states are different and whatever. It's important that you don't just go buy a vest online, and the licenses and things that people sell online are fake. Mm-hmm. So it's important to know that.
And that makes it difficult for somebody like you who actually needs a service dog when you're going somewhere and doing something, you know, having people who don't have trained dogs ruining it for people who have trained dogs who need them with them.
You will be surprised the things that people will admit to you when you have a dog. I've had people walk up to me all the time. They're like, oh yeah, I just put a vest on my dog. And I'm like, thank you. Don't tell me that.
It's not funny, but geez, Louise, come on.
Come on, people. But also the biggest cat. So besides doing your research and finding a reputable company, and just, it really, it's just a Google search, to be honest, or Four Paws and a Wake Up. it's important to know that they're reputable. It's important to know that, you know, they don't cost you $1 million too. You shouldn't be paying $1 million for a dog either.
Yeah.
Now, there are organizations also. Illinois has a one pet, one vet organization that will train you and your dog to be certified.
Okay.
So you can take your dog in and they will help you train that dog to be a service dog. I know a friend of mine, he used that organization. So okay. There's lots of them out there. And it's all about doing your research and finding what works best for you. Mm-hmm. Because everybody has different needs and everybody has different requirements and all that kind of stuff. But yes, please don't go and just bring your random dog to the grocery store.
Yeah, that's real life.
Yeah, please don't do that.
But
one more thing I want to add to that is that having as great as having a service dog is and the blessings that she has given me and the ability for me to live on my own, because I can't live on my own without her. Mm-hmm. It also does come with a lot of stress and other things that some people aren't prepared for. Hmm. So just kind of keep that in mind that having a service dog with you 24/7 is like having a 2-year-old, needs constant attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been denied access to places. I have had nasty things said to me. I have, you know, had a lot of things happen strictly because I have a dog. So those are things that you also have to keep in mind that it does take time. It does take it's a huge adjustment period. And a lot of people aren't educated or nice about it. So that's something that you do also have to be prepared for, is that you are going to have cases where you're kicked out, or you have to stand up for yourself, or you have to call the police because you're being denied access somewhere, or you're being treated unfairly. Like, it happens all the time. Which, so that is just something to keep in mind.
I could probably get on a soapbox about that, because holy moly, I can't even imagine. Like,
I could talk for days.
Yeah, for real. Maybe we'll do another podcast one day where we talk about that, just to bring awareness to that issue, because that is a huge issue. Wow, crazy. Well, thank you for sharing that resource, because that's huge. Were there any other resources? I know you mentioned Navy Safe Harbor. Were there any other resources that you found especially helpful during or after your transition?
You know what? I'm going to say this. The best resource out there is other veterans, hands down. A, because they're going to have resources for you, mm-hmm. but I think hands down, either your Wounded Warrior battalion or organization for your branch of service is always, in my opinion, a good place to start. But other veterans, because there are so many resources out there, it can be exhausting.
Yeah. For sure.
Some of them are good and some of them are not.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't throw shade to the ones that are not.
Yeah, let's not do that today. we're in the week of thankfulness. So let's.
Yeah. But there are so many good organizations out there. It's just a matter of finding them. And usually the people that are going through the same things you are going to have those resources. And then, of course, every state has their own resource as well. So it's important to search your state's veteran resources. And there are websites strictly for each state and their resources for veterans. And if you don't know what those are, I suggest you look into them, because there are a lot of resources out there that you don't know about. Or, you know, just for the simple fact that, you know, in the state of Illinois, if you have a disability rating, you don't, you know, you get a reduction in your property taxes. And in Illinois, that's freaking huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our property taxes are ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, but just little things like that. So that I can't say one other specific place besides reach out to your fellow veterans, find Facebook groups for veterans in your local area. VFWs, American Legions, whatever, and utilize them, because they are there. And just a simple fact of like reaching out to a veteran in your area or somebody you know who knows somebody in your area. I just had that happen for me last week where I was struggling with something and a friend of mine who lives in Wisconsin reached out to somebody who lives here by me and they're helping me with something I need help with.
That's awesome.
And yeah. And it's out of the kindness of their heart, no pity party, no nothing like that. They're just out of the kindness of their heart coming to help me do some stuff that I need help with.
That's
and
awesome.
I don't need an organization for that. You know, mm-hmm. I just need a friend. And so other veterans are your best sources of help, in my opinion.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think we covered so much today.
Well,
I really
good.
Do. I'm so grateful that you came on the show today. I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank
yeah.
you.
I think it's important. I don't often pull the female card. But I do think it's important for female veterans to be able to share their story too.
100%.
Like I get yeah. it. Like we all served and we were all sailors or Marines or soldiers or whatever.
That's right.
And when I was serving, I felt that way. But I think sometimes female veterans have a different experience in getting out of the military. So I'm...
Yeah.
grateful that you shared your story and your story is phenomenal anyways.
Appreciate it.
And I probably could talk for another 2 hours, but my editor would kill me.
One thing I would like to add to that note is that male or female, especially females, fight for your rights. There were many instances where I was denied medical care. I was denied my rights. I was denied whatever. I had to fight my ass off to get what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so important that you not let them put you down or take what you deserve and push it aside or whatever. Male or female, I talk to veterans every day and I'm like, go to the VA, apply for your medical claims, like do it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you get 10% or you get 0%, like whatever, like get it connected, military connected, get it taken care of, get it on your record, whatever, but fight for what you deserve because it sucks and it's hard. But there are people out there who will help you. And you deserve it. So don't let people take that away from you. That's the chief in me, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate your wisdom. I appreciate your time. And thank you for everything. And we'll talk soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening today to a Veterans Podcast. To learn more about us, to hear previous episodes, or if interested in being on the show, you can find us at aveteranspodcast.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Wisconsin Veterans Network, a Wisconsin nonprofit operated by veterans and serving veterans in need. Till next time.